Hi, everyone. Welcome to the timingresearch.com crowd forecast news, episode number 320 for November 22nd, 2021. We are recording this live at 1 p.m. Eastern time. My name is David Cosmeter. I'm the creator of timingresearch.com, and you should be seeing my screen right now, my charts. So I'm going to have it on the S&P 500 right now, and I'll display whatever we talk about throughout the episode. So today I've arranged for Simon Klein and Michael Filguera to join us, and the option professor is back to moderate. So I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to him.
Okay, great. Thanks, David. And thanks everybody for being here. We're going to have a very exciting Monday morning. As you can see, the tape has been very strong and then backed off a little bit, but very active, that's for sure. And tomorrow, more of the same is expected. So we'll have to see what's going to go on. Wednesday, we've got a big data dump, which we'll talk about to see what these guys think about that. But before we get started, let's introduce ourselves. Simon Klein, could you give a little background on yourself and a little bit about the firm?
Hi, Jim. Yeah, it's great to be here again.
Sure.
And thanks, David. Welcome, everybody, as well. So we're a trading education business. I've been in the trading industry, I guess, since since 1996, actually. I started out at Credit Suisse in London and New York, and then I kind of went my own way about 16 years ago. TradeSmart is a trading education business, and we focus primarily on teaching people how to read the market professionally. And that's no indicators, price action, and how to run a successful trading business. And that includes how to develop your own trading plan and strategies. And importantly, that fit your personality and lifestyle. Now, I'm a firm believer that you cannot trade someone else's strategy unless you make it your own first. And you have to make sure it fits you.
Excellent. And you'll get into a little bit more of that as we go on the broadcast, of course. Michael Filguera, can you explain a little bit about your background and also what your firm is doing?
Sure. My name is Michael Filguera. And I have been involved with the markets trading since 1979. And currently, I was an options market maker. And I was an options market maker in San Francisco, London, Amsterdam, Germany, and then I came back to San Francisco. I did retire from the floor, so I was a floor trader. And then when everything went electronic, I kind of shifted and came to my home office and made a decision probably about 8-9 years ago that I no longer wanted to carry positions in options and worry about overnight risk, et cetera, et cetera. So I became a day trader. And so that has been my focus. And I've kind of narrowed down again on strategies, how I want to employ my own strategies. I like very much what Simon said about making a strategy your own. And so that's what I've been doing. And now I, through my company, I have a trade room and I also produce daily updates for the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ 100. And those are both on YouTube.
Okay, perfect. Now let's get into what's going on right now. We have the market opening today on the SPX, using that as a reference point, at 47.12. It ran all the way up to 47.43. Now it's back to pretty much around the same. But from today's opening at 47.12 and Friday's close, let's get your opinions on where you think we'll end up. Simon, from 47.12, higher, lower, or the same?
I'm looking at the, almost hovering around that price now. I'm looking at the E-minis. I'm looking at the futures instead of the actual underlying. And that's about the price. We're hovering around 47.11 at the moment. I think the market generally is still very bullish based on the bigger time frame, the monthly chart. But there is room for a pullback if the market so chooses. And I would look, if it's going to go down, the line in the sand is probably around 4667. So if it goes below there, we may get a pullback down to, and again, it would most likely be a viable pullback because the trend, look at the trend on the monthly and the weekly and the daily, everything's pointing up. Mm-hmm. So still, it's a pretty strong market. So any moves down will probably get bought until the trend breaks on one of those bigger timeframes.
Sure. And you feel pretty confident about that pretty much?
Yeah. I mean, we could have short term, we're going to have, it's not going to go in a straight line. We're probably going to have a move down. We did have today, classic move today is where it pushes up to new highs and then sells off.
Yeah. Now, Michael, you had a target on the first run up of around 47.20, which actually turned out to be pretty good because we went down about 100 points off of that. So that was a pretty good point to sell against. You also said that it's possible on your work that we could make another high by a little bit, which we just did today, and then we could see a more significant pullback of some type. Do you still feel a little bit like that could happen?
Yes, I do, actually. It got up to into the zone and actually exceeded the zone slightly this morning, and that zone was from 47.30 to 47.36, and we got up to, I believe, 41. And then, of course, then the pullback came. Now, as far as like what I think could happen for the rest of the week, I still think there is the potential, and I'd have to give it a 50% probability, that the market will again turn higher and move up to the next level, which is 47.50 to like 55, somewhere in that area. But here's what I am looking for. I am looking for the completion points for some very long-term advancing sequences. And so to just make reference to what Simon has already stated, that on those longer-term charts, the monthly, the weekly, they are still pointing up. He's absolutely correct. And I would agree with that 100%. But what I initially start to look for is if we have reached a top that completes all of those advancing sequences, and the largest one being advancing sequences that actually started in 1932. So we got a lot of correction to do once it kicks in. Mm-hmm. So, and again, I'm coming from a technical point of view versus one that's going to be more fundamental or working within the economic news, et cetera, et cetera. So again, Elliott Wave and Fibonacci really don't know anything about or take any of the news or any fundamentals into play. So it's purely a technical view. But what I now look for, if indeed today's high completed all those sequences, then I'm looking for on my hourly chart what I would call an Elliott five waves down. So that's what I'm going to look for. But I will state also that this downside, if it holds above the hourly 200, which sits at 46.86, we're in great shape. Then yes, turn and this thing could run all the way back up. But then again, I am agreeing with Simon's level that he said 46.67. I think a break there is going to lead, put a lot of support on the market having completed the advancing cycles.
If we went down there, you would have gotten about a 75 point drop off today's high. So that would be a pretty reasonable drop too, you know?
Right. But it would be a reasonable drop, but I would not make any claims to, okay, tops are in until I can see on my hourly chart a five wave sequence down. And at best right now, what we're seeing, and David's got a little 5 minute up, but the best for what I can see is that we maybe off that high at 47.40, maybe have a one and a little two in progress. So, you know, and if that's the case, then what the next expectation would be, and this is what I tell people. So it's like, if you come in and you see this happening, this is what it is. It would be a third wave, and that third wave would be expected to break 46.94, 46.84, 46.68, and end up down close to 46.25.
That low we had the other week of around 46.30.
That's the low that I would put more emphasis on. If it breaks there, we likely have seen the highs for right now.
Well, can we put up the Russell IWM as an example, and also just an idea on the daily? Do you see this as a little bit of a reversal on a daily basis?
Oh God, yes, I do.
And these are small caps, so it seems like they're discarding the small caps right now.
Well, I was very, very, very impressed with the Russell running all the way up as high as it did.
Yeah, 245. Oh, yeah,
it was. But then you can see straight, and again, going to the IWM's daily chart, look at those straight off that high, three solid decline days of decline.
Yeah.
And now we're working again on some solid downside action. Support on a daily chart comes in at 230.
Yeah. 230. And we're not very far from it, a couple of points.
No, but that's the 50. So that's a major.
And then your RSI in the bottom there, you wouldn't want it going too much lower than it is right now.
You got that right too.
So you got a pretty good point there if you're bullish to look at that 230 number and look at that RSI number to see if it's going to be a point to trade against. Yes. Otherwise, it would be a more significant correction ahead, huh?
Right. And my RSI is actually a little bit lower than David's. I don't see why, because it's on the same chart. Oh, yours is on a 5 minute. Okay. Mine's on a daily.
But this thing did open and it went higher. And then for whatever reason, it just rolled over.
They all got caught.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of it was the options expiration on Friday being a monthly, and it's how everybody came out of that. Mm-hmm. And so I think they came out probably a little bit shorter than they wanted to be. So they had to come in and buy, and then they probably regretted it.
Now, Simon, you're not looking at too much of the fundamentals. So Wednesday, we've got a data dump, they're calling it, where you're going to get everything from the jobless claims to consumer numbers, you know, personal income, spending, et cetera, the five-year inflation expectations, the Fed meeting minutes, core inflation, and, you know, how much personal spending is going on. You know, when you look at the XLY, which is the discretionary, you would imagine the consumer is spending like mad because those are consumer discretionaries, and that ETF has gone nuts. But do you have any opinion on Wednesday's action? Because we have a holiday on Thursday and no data on Friday. So whichever way they come out on Wednesday could have a big effect for the rest of the week too, huh?
Yeah, it could do. But again, it's all going to be reflected in price. So if you're watching the charts, you'll know, instead of trying to look at the news and seeing how the markets are going to kind of digest it, I guess, you'll see it reflected in the charts. So, yeah. I spent many years at the beginning trying to focus on fundamentals. That's how I started out. It was fundamentals and technicals together. Yeah. And then I just, you know, I couldn't fathom out. I spent like literally 3 years solid, you know, hours before the market opened. Like we were in the office, like Eastern time, like 6 o'clock in the morning. Yeah. Before the 9:30 open. And we just spent like literally three and a bit hours going through fundamentals and everything and trying to figure out, you know, if the market's going to, whatever the news is going to. We also paid for a news service that we got before it hit the general public as well. As a trading floor. But I found it never gave me an edge because there may have been some other news out there that I wasn't privy to that I didn't know about. And the market would do, you know, the opposite of what I thought the news would do to the market. And then we used to look at, you know, what the news historically done and then what's it likely going to do now. I didn't see anything that I could kind of grasp onto. So I said, okay, forget about that. Let's just focus on what the charts are doing and who cares why.
And it could be a situation of buy the rumor, sell the fact, because if you put up XLY, you'll notice it's had a very big run going into these reports on Wednesday. And also today's action is a little bit, turning around a little bit, not a lot, but, you know, it made a new high there and then it's kind of setting there. So we're trading underneath where it opened, I think. And so it'll be interesting to see, because again, today and tomorrow, a lot of traders I talked to were expecting a big move to the upside, which we're getting, but then they were kind of silent on what's going to happen when the volume is thin around Thanksgiving and the day after. So, like I say, it'll be interesting to see, because the boat is definitely leaning to the upside pretty well, you know. As far as, longer term, Simon, like I say, a lot of people are talking that we're going to continue to run in December, and then we're really going to run in January. And you feel because the long-term trends are pointing up, that's still the way to bet, maybe buy every dip if you get one?
What happened in September, we had a down month, right. A pretty big down month. Yeah, that took out almost the prior 2 months. Now, what generally would happen on that, if you put up the monthly chart of, say, the E-minis, you can see that, David, maybe, and you want to focus the monthly chart of the E-minis? Yes.
That's all it's showing for some reason.
Okay, so there you go. That's what's there. You see that? The big bar from 2 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
That's a September bar. You can't see on this chart, but there's a big drop down to the next kind of demand area below, which is around the kind of 3,800, and I'll take exactly 3,860 area. Yeah, you can see it could drop down. There's room to drop. Yeah. Now, when I see something like that, when you have potential for a market to drop down with a big bar off and it completely reverses the following month, that means it's going higher most of the time. Yeah. I mean, it's a negation of negativeness. Yeah. It could have gone down and pulled back, but the market said, no, we're going higher and immediately reverse the next month. That means we've got some more upside most of the time. Yeah. And again, we're talking about probabilities here. So the majority of the time in that scenario, the market's going to continue moving higher. So
Not dissimilar from the March of 2020 when we had the big drop and then we had the turn.
That was a bit different because the March drop actually started in February.
Right.
It actually broke the trend, but it landed in a demand area. And when you get those kind of V-shaped quick drops and bounce back, the market, and I remember saying, and we have a trading room. So I remember saying in the trading room, when it hit the bottom, the trend broke at the bottom, the end of the down move, and it put in a bottom. So that was when to start buying in. And I said, it's most likely going to break to new highs. And lo and behold, we see the market making massive new. I mean, this is the biggest bull run in the history of the stock market, full stop.
We've never seen. Long-term chart will show you that this move we've seen last year and this year is just all the way in order, inordinate. You know?
From the March lows last year, to this year, if you look at the drop, the rally is like, it's almost three times the size of it.
Yeah, I think we're 50% above the highs of COVID, 3,400 minus 4,700. That's about it's about 40% higher than the all-time highs based on the S&P 500 index. You know?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the low in March was 2174, and it's massive. It's over double.
So it's been it's very, very powerful, no doubt about that. And the breadth of it into all these different sectors is interesting as well. You know,
I mean, the only other reason when it gets too bullish, then you got to start when everything's pointing up and it starts starting to kind of really accelerate to the upside, that's sometimes when you put in a top.
Yeah.
It's like an acceleration up. And, you know, if you think about it from a supply demand perspective, if everyone in the world is bought, who else is left to buy? If everyone buys, then, you know, everyone's in holding and everyone's bought what they want and there's no more, you know, so, and prices are high with people, then what happens is people start selling, you know, cashing in or whatever. And that kicks off a move to the downside. When you get an acceleration to the upside, the supply demand kind of flips over because there's no more demand at high levels and people start selling. So the supply becomes greater than demand and prices drop.
That reversion to the mean is looking at you in the face, but a lot of people don't think that reversion will occur until February because they're going to have the December holiday sales going, and then they're going to have the January effect. So they're thinking that if you're going to get a reversion to the mean, the February, March timeframe would be more likely than any time before then. How do you feel about that?
I don't know. I just watched the chart.
You ever do seasonality or time sequences or anything?
Not really. I mean, I just look at what the chart's doing, where it is in relation to supply and demand, what the trend is,
right,
and you know, what the bigger timeframes are doing. Where am I on the smaller timeframes in relation to that, and mm-hmm. where price can possibly go next? And if I want to buy, where's my level down that I want to buy at? If I want to sell, where's the level up I want to sell at? And how do I manage risk? That's what I'm looking at.
Now, Michael, you look at the metals quite a bit, but I was going to ask you to take a look at steel, which is not one of your normal ones. If we look at Cleveland Cliffs, CLF, or US Steel X, they both look like they're turning up and maybe breaking out here a little bit. Do you see anything that even looks like that? How long a chart is it? Yeah, there you go. That's the one that looked kind of...
I will talk about that, but I wanted just to piggyback on what Simon and you were talking about.
Sure.
With reference to the S&P, yes, it's made a strong high. And David, if you could just quickly go back to your chart there, that would be very helpful for me. But I think that what really we need to pay attention to is the fact that we are up into uncharted territory, and both the NASDAQ, the Dow, the Russell, all of them, they've gotten up so high, there is nothing to really base any support or resistance on because we've never been here before. So when you have a monthly chart up that David showed, count it off of that low, that post, that initial post-pandemic low that we hit, and you're going to be able to count five waves up on that extended monthly chart. And that tells you that's the end. Now, when putting in reference as you did, it's like what the public or what investors are going to believe as the Santa rally and then the January effect, that's status quo.
Mm-hmm.
And what I see really happening is we're breaking the status quo. And so the initial plays within that are going to be ignored or not believed. So it's easier to believe the status quo than it is to believe reality.
Right. So if this thing were to break, there's a lot of people who are definitely conditioned now to not sell and buy the dip.
Right.
And you think that conditioning could come back and haunt them at some point?
Oh, I believe it could come back and destroy them.
Yeah.
Because what comes next, again, putting things into perspective, the degree of this rally that it's finishing, like I said, it's over 90 years.
Yeah.
So yes, there's been a lot of minor levels and major, you know, the different degree levels that we've had on the way up. But the largest level is, this is the rally that started in 1932. So we need to correct. So if any people want to wrap around what it's the size of a correction that we could have here, look at that pandemic low again and look at where we're sitting now. And that's what we're going to correct first. All of that activity we've now had for the last year and three quarters. So believing that, well, no, that's not going to happen. Well, because we are status quo, we always rally in December. We always have our January effect. I was like, well, what if it doesn't happen? What
that's
then?
Why God created the stop loss, I guess.
Amen. Now, over on Cliffs.
There's something seems to be going on in the steel area, and this is industrial metals, Cleveland Cliffs, and there's some pretty sharp guys who think this is a $30 stock. So I was just wondering if you guys see anything there that would be interesting.
I don't disagree. I think that I could definitely, so far off of that high, and that high for me, the one I'm talking about is most recent at 2650.
Uh-huh.
It's an Elliott three waves down. Now that's provided that this rally that's now, you know, got 2 days in,
right,
it can't fail.
Right, no.
If it fails and it comes down and it takes out 2092, which is the low,
right,
and starts heading for that 200, it's turning the sequence into a five waves
down. Yeah. What about X? X, I think, even looked better than this. X marks the spot.
X marks the spot.
There you go. What about X?
You're right. It actually does, Jim. Yeah. It does look better. Yeah. And the rally.
Looks like it's going to blow out 28, maybe, huh?
And get going. I think so. And it looks pretty clean to and set up to do that. But what, you know, then I always think about what can disrupt it. And then right now, I mean, if it's trading on just some fundamentals that steel prices are firm and that demand is still high, that's kind of putting into what construction is going to do. Now we're going back to your numbers that are going to come out on Wednesday.
Yeah.
And so when we start seeing, you know, on durable goods, you know, we have so much coming out on Thursday. I'm so glad that you brought that up because it is an important day. We have durable goods, GDP, international trade in goods. Those are the first three that come out at 8:30 along with jobless.
Out of like 10 or 15.
Exactly. Yeah. So the first four can really toss us into the sewer or blast us off to the moon.
Yeah, because it's going to be thin time.
And that's
so the algos would have a very easy time pushing the price very substantially.
Oh my God, they still do today. That's why it went up so quickly today.
Can you go to a longer term graph on U.S. steel, like go out to like a 10-year graph or something like that? It gives you a perspective of a longer term. And if this thing really got on its bicycle, there's plenty of real estate above. You know?
I'm going to go out to my monthly max. Oh yeah, Jim. I mean, this thing on my monthly, my max.
Yeah.
This whole sequence started off those March 2020 lows.
Yeah.
On U.S. steel. Okay.
Yeah.
And yes, on my max monthly, the 200, Jim, is sitting at 2885.
Yeah.
So it's gone up twice. Actually, it's gone up four times. Twice broke above it, but sank back below. And twice has tested it. Now, on this particular one, if it can get up there and get itself above 2885 and close, get a close above that level, then yes, this thing's off to the moon.
Simon, do you ever do formations like cup and handle or any of that kind of stuff?
I'm aware of all of that, but not really.
Yeah, because this thing looks a little bit like a cup and a handle, and I don't know how a cup and handle resolves. I think it resolves with an upside move, but I'm not sure.
I'm looking at more on the pivots, not the trader floor pivots, but actually all the pivots and the candlesticks. I'm looking to see if it pulls back, if it holds a higher low, for example. And that's basically a cup and handle, many reversal patterns. You know, head and shoulders, same thing. It's going, making lower lows, for example, lower highs until it makes a higher low. And that's the other side of the shoulder.
Right.
And then it goes up above, you know, the neckline or whatever.
Yeah.
They're just reversal patterns. They just show that if you're looking at it, because everything's supply and demand. I look at everything through the eyes of supply and demand. So trend is a view on supply and demand. And obviously those levels of supply and demand are supply and demand. And, you know, also the direction that price is moving in as well. If it's moving up, you know, there's more demand than supply. So everything's a supply demand equation. So it all comes down to, you know, if you keep it simple, prices will move up when there's more demand than supply and down when there's more supply than demand. And that's as simple as what it is. Question is, how do you recognize that on the chart? That's why I've spent most of the past, you know, decade and a half kind of specializing in basically looking at what that looks like on a chart.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you go and you look at every, you know, every clear, clean move on the chart and you go and see what preceded it, and then you can start to analyze that in real time and start to understand the patterns that are forming and what the rules are. And then as it's happening in real time, you start to see, you know, this is one of those, it's going to do this most of the time. And you can start to get statistics on it because you've seen it so many times in so many different market conditions.
Mm-hmm.
So that's basically what I, you know, to have a framework for reading the market and then an experience by actually putting it into practice in the live market.
Sure.
And then you can, it's just about recognizing, hey, this is one of those, this is this scenario in the market and that's that scenario. So as I said right at the beginning, it's a very, you know, if you watch what happens when the S&P hits new highs and it kind of comes from a base and rallies to new highs, you usually get a sell-off after that, which is what happened today.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing again and again and again. So you notice, hey, it's one of those patterns that's setting up.
You know, another one that hit me in the last week or so, which I took advantage of, was FedEx, FDX. Can we look at that? To me, it looks like a clear, you know, pullback down to 241. And now it looks like it should take out 255. Well, what do you see on FedEx here? Yeah. Does that look like a pullback and now we're going to blow out 255 and get running? Because the transportation index is very, very strong today. So again, going into the holiday season, blah, blah, blah. But anyway, it does look like this thing used to be 320. So there's some real estate above on this one too, right?
Mm-hmm.
This one look any good to you guys or what do you think?
I'm looking at the monthly chart and I think that I would agree with you, but it's buffeting up against the monthly eight. So that's a moving average. And I've got pretty much a flat 50 and a flat 20. And that kind of tells me sideways.
I got you.
Now,
so you don't think it might take out the 255?
It definitely could take out the 255. I would not put it past it. It's only $6 from where we are.
Right.
And FedEx can certainly rally $6 in a day or two.
It's up $6 today.
Real problem. But I think a lot of it's going to depend on, again, what the perception, if we can get any early clues on, you know, just holiday deliveries. So because I think you could try to base it on past, but then again, we're kind of in a new thing here.
Well, the other thing is that we have Black Friday. If we don't see big crowds at the stores trying to cram in, it would tell you that they're online buying it that way.
Buying it online. So yes, and I like that's a good point.
Actually, I think there's a online, the following Monday, isn't there a Cyber Monday that would probably be a big factor as well. So I'm sure by the end of next, by the end of not this week, but the week after, if it was going to blow out 255, it would probably happen by then.
Right, right.
You know, I just thought the setup looked pretty good. And like I say, it's everything else is at the highest price in the history of mankind. At least this one is not. You know what I mean?
There you go.
It's nice to pepper the higher ones in the history of mankind with a few that are coming off the mat. You know what I mean?
Right.
But when you do your studying on all the different ways of approaching the markets and looking for accumulation, distribution, Simon, and, you know, buyers and seller balances, do you have some sectors right now that you find to be more attractive or less attractive than others?
Primarily for intraday trading, focused on, you know, I look at the Forex majors. I focus a lot on what the dollar's doing because that affects every market.
Sure. So you are looking at currencies pretty aggressively?
Currencies. I'm looking at futures. I'm looking at the futures for the E-minis, the NASDAQ. I'm looking at gold and oil. And I'm looking at also Bitcoin futures as a view on what's happening in the cryptocurrency world.
Well, let's start on a few of these things to get a little bit of your opinion. The dollar index is 96.45. You know, it seemed to have had a little resistance at 95, and it seems to be going through that. Do you think that the European situation, where they can't hike rates and that they're having COVID difficulties, could cause a spike up in the dollar and cause that euro to maybe go towards 110 versus 115?
Okay, I have no idea about any of the fundamental reasons for anything, but at the moment, the dollar's on its way. The dollar, I mean, I decided a long time ago that this clouds my judgment of the charts, because I'm looking at the chart and I think it should do something because of some fundamental, it's not. It's a bit like there was a guy on the trading. I'll give you an example. There was a guy on the trading floor I used to work on many years ago. It was probably about 15 years ago. And he used to say, oh, it's just got to go up. Good news, got to go up. So he's buying all the way down, buying. And it just never went up. And he ended up losing a tremendous, you know, it's like, but the news was good. I'm like, so what? Yeah. It's going down. It's even worse if there's good news and it's going down.
Right.
So I see the dollar, and I said, I put out a video in training. I was invited to speak in China at the Bogle Investment Forum at the beginning of the year in January. And I said, if the dollar holds, the dollar index holds this 90 level, it's actually a bit lower than that. I said, it's most likely if it holds that level, it's going back up to the 100 area. And that's where it's on its way to now. It broke above 90, the 95 kind of, that could have been the top of a base. And we called that out in our trading room actually last week. It broke above that, and it's on its. There's nothing really to. There are little time frame, you know, small time frame kind of areas where it could stop. But it looks like to me it's going back up to the 100.
Yeah, it definitely looks like that. And then you know later down the road, but you got to play the hands that are being dealt right now.
Yeah, I mean that's bigger picture. I thought we'd do it this year. It may still do it before the end of the year. Who knows? Yeah. It's quite a big move, but it's made a big move already this month, and we're not over yet.
Well, let's throw the gold chart up for Michael and he can give us an idea of what he thinks here, because we did break out on the upside on the silver and gold. Now we're pulling back down. At what level would you throw in the towel on the bull side? And, you know, what are you thinking here?
Wow.
Because it's really come right down to the breakout point. So it's really in a crunch neighborhood here.
But it's done it in that type of a day where, having been a gold bug for as many years as I have, I used to rely on the floor traders. Right. So I think all of them are now sitting behind computers, but I maybe still consider them a floor trader, that they just knew when the weak hands were too long.
Yeah.
And I think that's what produced today. Other than I also see the dollar just knocking out the euro. And so to kind of, again, piggyback on what Simon is saying, if that dollar continues to go up, gold is cooked. Now, when I look at this chart, and I originally, you know, I've had to switch it around from that low that it did in August, I had felt that we would rally a little bit, but we were going to head back down. And I thought at that point, we were going to head towards 1500. 1600 or at least below 1600. Mm-hmm. Well, now that's kind of gone all the way up almost back to 1900, right? It stopped just below 1880. And look at that. It's a three-wave pattern up and then a very strong decline right off the highs.
I can throw a sister chart up there that might help people who do stocks. You can see the gold right in this 1800 neighborhood is pretty much, you know, hitting some support, whether it holds or not, only God knows. But if you put up Newmont Mining, NEM, that came down and hit about 55, which is kind of support as well. And of course, this is the Cadillac of gold stocks, as far as I can see. And
just like gold, Jim, yeah. I'm also looking at the Newmont on a weekly chart. Uh-huh. It's gone up in three off of that low in September. Uh-huh. It's gone up in three and now it's declined, even though it's rallying a little bit today.
Yeah.
Or off of those lows.
That's what I'm saying. It's bouncing like gold is trying to bounce off 1800.
Right. And I don't think it's going to work.
Now, it looks like it's a, shall we say,
in fact, Newmont is headed, now that it's slipped below the 50,
yeah.
At least on my weekly, that it's headed for the 200, which is at 50.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So,
but it does pay 4% dividend. So while it's bouncing around, at least you're getting cash flow on your money.
And I actually don't dislike Newmont as a corporation because I think that they are the one of the few that have a much lower cost in getting gold out of the ground.
Yeah, but that RSI is not encouraging, staying under 50.
No, but I think that you can accumulate. I mean, if that's part of your game plan, or just put some puts under a long position and ride it. Because I don't think
or would be the easiest thing to do is wait for it to get above 60 on its way to 72.
That works too.
Yeah, because sometimes that's an easier road to travel: buy high and sell higher, as opposed to buy low and watch it go down further. You know,
I agree.
So the gold's on the defensive today, and the oil stocks are making a turn. But if you put up XLE, it'll give you an idea of what the oil shares are actually looking like. They're actually, they're hanging in there today, and they did hold their moving averages there. Simon, do you have any feeling on this chart?
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at oil futures. I think it's got potential to go higher from here.
Yeah,
as we said today, to watch it. This is exactly where it needs to turn if it's going to go higher.
Yeah.
And I'm looking on the monthly and a weekly chart. I mean, it's the trend on the weekly chart's not up anymore, but it's still up on a monthly chart, and it just broke above these highs. These are the highs from October 2018. So we took out the highs, and there's clear. This is just a pullback to the breakout to where it broke out. So if it holds here, then there's potential for oil to go all the way back up to 100, 100 and even 105, 110 even.
Yeah, because this putting out strategic oil, that's a temporary thing, I think, The reality of no investment into new production and the rig count still way behind what it used to be, and the demand factor out there, it still bodes fairly well for the oil, unless something comes happening with the supply side out of Saudi Arabia or something like that.
Well, I think you guys could lose a lot of clients in California if they don't get crude prices lower.
Not
going against your analysis, because I think your analysis is spot on, so nothing to say, but I live in San Francisco and gas is $5 or higher, but go down south to Los Angeles and there are stations that are over $6 a gallon.
I wonder if that's a refinery issue, because obviously gas is a refined product, and maybe if the refineries
we go through this period where, at least in the state, we would call it that, it's the change of the season. So they go from a summer blend to a winter blend.
Right.
But that has already happened. So I don't know really what it is now that's keeping the prices so high. But I agree with the analysis. I just am not really looking forward to it going to 100.
Well, what about the on-take of electrical cars, EVs?
Yeah.
I'm talking about globally.
Oh yeah. I see that, and I like it, the fact that it's being switched over. But I think right now there's too much hype in the price. I mean, there's not an electric car company out there that's made any money yet, including Tesla. Tesla want to report a good quarter, but they've not overall made money as a company. So I hesitate on saying, I think it's a great purchase. But I do believe in electric cars as our future. I definitely believe in that. And I think then eventually that will, we'll see crude do what it did back in 2020. I don't know if it'll go negative, but it certainly will drop.
I mean, I think it's kind of interesting the way technology works nowadays. In the past, it used to take time for new technologies to kind of be put into practice, into use by the public. But now it's much quicker and technology is changing very quickly.
Right. No, that's true. That's
very true. It could happen very, very quickly. I mean, it could happen in a few years.
Absolutely. I agree. But for a trader, 2 years is an eternity.
Yeah, the big picture for the electric cars might be favorable, obviously, to Ford, something that I I think is fantastic as far as what they could do. And then GM with a P ratio of 8. I mean, how can you be afraid of an 8 PEA with that kind of distance?
And I agree with you on Ford. Totally agree with you on Ford. In fact, that not to state anything, but I have been long Ford forever.
Yeah, I mean, like I say, it's got a fantastic distribution. And the one that people keep coming into a little bit, it's backing off now, but is that QS, QuantumScape, because they really like them, their research and their development in the battery area,
which is actually that's where I probably would send people before I would send them to the actual vehicle maker,
right?
Because what's going to back the car is the battery, and if they can improve the life of the battery or just the charge, you know, how many miles you're going to get. Wow, that's something to own.
LIT is another one that people like to use to get exposure to this as well.
Yeah, but that one, look at that one. I would go to the other one first, but LIT, you know, a lot of people are already in.
Yeah, yeah. But it gives you a more broad base because it's an ETF with a bunch of stuff in there, you know what I mean?
Oh, is it? Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, lithium. Okay.
Yeah. So,
right. And I think, you know, as they start to really improve things where we're seeing it to really be broadly accepted in the trucking industry, holy cow, watch out, right? Because,
you know,
it's still going to be transportation that gets our goods from A to B.
Yeah. There's a lot of people also who are into footwear because when everybody goes back to work, they're going to be in sneakers and stuff. So they love this Crocs, C-R-O-X. And other footwear companies.
Overvalued.
Yeah, but it's certainly been a nice ride all the way up.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And then as we go into the holidays, people are in love with this Capri Holdings CPRI. It's another one that, you know, they have Jimmy Choo and Michael Kors and all these name brands, I guess you'd call them.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's got one more new high to do.
Yeah, it looks like it could have something going on there because, you know, people are buying the high-end stuff.
They are.
I think that's one of the reasons why Target has done so well, in addition to their online digital versus Walmart, because people have a little bit more money in their pocket and they feel like they're having a little bit of a more upscale event when they go to Target, you know, from the standpoint of it is a little bit of a, you know, nicer store, I guess people would say.
But here's a question that I would just put out to both you, Simon, and you, Jim, that at what point do we realize that so many of these retail companies are just so overvalued? So at what point are they not able to sustain the higher price versus what they actually are taking in?
Well, I mean, you know, one retailer that has not, there's a few of them that are actually down today. One is up a little bit, but it's kind of done Starbucks, SBUX. It's a big, big company, but like I say, it looks like it hit 110 and it could maybe hold that area, mm-hmm. but it certainly is having a hard time getting above 115.
Right.
You know?
Right. And so it may have finished its, you know, post that March 2020 rally. So again, I mean, that's, you know, just to kind of put into balance what Simon looked for. This is what I start to look for. Members of the NASDAQ, members of the S&P, when they start to break, is that really going to be leading the way and to what sector is actually starting to break down? And right now, I think in the S&P and in the NASDAQ, what's holding it up are the titans.
They're all running into Microsoft and they're running into Apple. And that's such a heavy part of the index. It's camouflaging maybe weakness elsewhere. I'll give you two other quick retailers because we are in the season of buying. TJX and RX. And after this, I'll give you another one. But, you know, obviously that has lost altitude of significance. Now it's come down into some support, which gives you another idea when reversion to the mean occurs, this is what it looks like.
Yeah.
And the other one is Ross Stores, ROST. Now, these are obviously discounters. So, you know, you would think they would be doing better, but they look like they'd rather go to San Diego than to San Francisco if you were in LA. You know?
There you go. I mean, this is another one where I just sit and I stare and I go like, yeah, their earnings aren't bad.
Yeah.
So people are, you know, they're going in and they're scooping. But
I think the margins are getting squeezed is what they say because of, the higher costs and higher labor, et cetera, et cetera.
Because of the supply chain.
Right.
And I don't think those problems have been resolved. And so I agree with you. Until I still start to see those being resolved, I don't discount upside in any of the retail.
You know, I was down the harbor, Michael, down in San Pedro about 2 months ago, maybe 3 months ago, something like that. And I saw all these containers out there and I didn't see any people. And then I heard this Marty Walsh, who's the head of something for the government, saying that he was going to fly to LA and make sure they're on 24/7 now. So ultimately, they're going to unpack all that stuff that's out in the harbor, and ultimately, it's going in the stores. By the time that happens, will the pent-up demand turn into normal demand, and will prices then really be...
We'll have everything on sale.
Then we'll have sales.
Yeah. I mean, and that same thing, you know, being that I live in San Francisco, I cross the Bay Bridge often because I go over to Oakland, and I'm telling you, the Bay is full of container ships waiting to get into the port to be unloaded.
Yeah. So all we need is people to unload it and get it on trucks and get moving. Maybe that's why FedEx is going to start moving. Who knows?
You know, that could be true. That could be true.
Yeah. But we'll have to see, because there is some interesting things. I mean, people would not think two major retailers like this would actually be going down going into Christmas.
Right.
You know, this is a little bit surprising, I think.
You know, it depends on what indexes they're in.
Yeah.
You know, and if you've got all the bigger guys are coming in and selling their baskets, Ross Stores included, it's going to go with.
I was surprised today that I saw a negative action in Google and Amazon.
That's because they caught the longs, Jim.
I got you. Yeah, and Google's down 40. Google's down $41 here today, and Amazon is Amazon's down $75.
Amazon was down 100. It's actually bounced back a little bit.
Yeah, it was down 100 and change.
Yeah, but again, if I'm just, I'm looking at a weekly chart on Amazon. I think it's got a shot at 3,900. I do, but it's going to have to do it again this week.
Yeah, it's going to have to do it probably right after Cyber Monday if it comes out as a huge buying day.
Right, right. So we give it a week.
Yeah. You know? And it is just really coming down again, coming back towards the mean a little bit, huh?
Yes. And again, on a weekly chart, it's still holding above the more important moving averages. The 20 is down at 3440. Mm-hmm. 50 is down at 3300. So, you know, it's got plenty of room before it would be, for my book, that it would be considered, oh, all done. We're going, you know, we're going to drop. So I don't see that yet. I definitely don't see it yet. And either one, Google, I'm not sure why they would hit Google other than it was just options positions unfolding and people coming in today from Friday's expiration. Maybe they were a little bit too long and now they bought that and have realized, oops, I didn't need to do that. Whatever the situation is. But I think that's what's in control in these big Titan stocks. It's the option traders. It's how the options are trading. But then again, it's the volatility, it's the premium, et cetera, et cetera. And sometimes it has nothing to do with the actual, what is the underlying. But then that goes back to, you know, to how Simon views the market, which I have great respect for, which you just take away all of that and you look at price action.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. It's nice to at least have some idea of what's going on in the world. But, you know, again, the price action is the ultimate arbiter. So that's why Simon is 110% correct. That's where your focus has got to be.
Yeah, I agree. Totally agree.
Well, since you have a little twang in your voice, Simon, I'm going to ask you, what do you think of the European situation as far as the DAX? And or do you follow the DAX or the CAC or the FTSE or any of that stuff?
No, I don't really follow it.
Yeah. You just play British on TV. You're not really British. Now, anyhow, yeah, I was just asking because, you know, there is a little bit of winds of change blowing over there. I mean, Merkel's gone and they got a new government coming in, right? I don't know if you keep up with that kind of stuff, but it, you know.
Not a big one into news.
Yeah, yeah. Well, like I say, when they change government sometimes. And then Chile, again, I'm talking international now for people who, you know, are looking overseas because some people are trying to find other places to diversify into. Chile just had a government situation and their stock market jumped up about 6 or 10% in one day here today. And then in Brazil, you've got all kinds of problems over there with inflation. So they're actually going down. But how about in the commodity sector, Simon? Is there any markets that are sticking out? Some people are thinking this coffee might really keep going. Or is there any commodities you're following?
Look at gold and basically gold, oil, silver.
Metals and oil.
We talked about gold moving down. It changed trends on the daily chart basically yesterday. So it was a no-brainer sell today.
Right.
Super simple. Failed to make a new high. Direction changed down. And came off monthly supply areas as well.
Now, silver, of course, is an industrial metal heavily used in these batteries and solar panels, etc. Do you see a different scenario there, or is it pretty much two in the same boat?
It's slightly different chart. I mean, it's looking like a pullback on a weekly chart. Look at the weekly chart of silver, but silver and gold most often go hand in hand. Both precious metals.
And the crude oil, you thought this $75 that it hit would be an area that might be a tradable low?
Possibly. I don't know how. I mean, it's still early days. I mean, it's kind of chopping around on the hourly chart.
Not much water under the bridge to make a determination.
It's the right location, right kind of zone on the weekly chart and the monthly chart, but you've still got to see a bit more kind of confirmation of it.
Right.
I always say, you know, like if the setup's very a high probability setup, then I always say you need less confirmation to get into the trade. So the higher the probability setup, the least confirmation you need to enter, the lower the probability, wait for more confirmation. Wait until it's obviously turned around. You could wait on the daily chart, for example, till that trend's reversed or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then you can potentially, you know, get in. Sometimes waiting for the market to get more bullish and then waiting for the first pullback after that may be a better way to managing risk than to getting when it's moving down. And it may continue moving down, if you see what I mean.
Yeah. Let's throw one last thing up there before we sign out. The financials, you know, banks, finance, you know, the financials, XLF, that, you know, that did sell off, but it does look like it has tried to make a turn. Does that look like it just a little bit more strength would be in order, but it could be an opportunity where it may start making new highs by the end of the year?
I wouldn't say new highs, but I do see that it's bouncing nicely. Well, it has a shot at new highs, and I'm on the daily chart. The RSI on the daily is pointing straight up. So maybe that turn has happened. It does appear that we likely did gap a little bit, even though you don't see it. But it on last week, it broke below the 50 moving average, and then today got back above it. That's a major plus for any rally attempt from here. Next up in my book would be that it's got a clear 40.68.
Well, to me, it's pretty clear that the QQQs are down and the banks are up for one real good reason, and that is yields are rising today.
Right.
So why don't we look at TLT and see if... my feeling on TLT is, you know, that if it can stay above 135, which was the low, and then about 140, you know, it still might be a decent thing. Is that still, you know, right now it's having a pullback, obviously. But if you look at like a really long-term graph on it, sometimes it gives you an idea that this is a critical area for interest rates. This 175 on the 10-year, you know.
I think you're right that it's a very critical place for interest rates. Absolutely. And, and let's not forget. Again, I think that every trader, every retail professional, keep in mind interest rates sit at the top of the food chain.
Oh, yeah.
What happens to interest rates is going to just trickle and flow down and either kill everybody or make everybody happy. So,
I mean, if yields went up and rates went up, that means every house is going to be affected. That means every car guy is going to be affected. Every credit card is going to be affected. Yep. And without credit cards and leverage in the things that are actually going up, they wouldn't be going up.
Right. You know, and your margin's going to be higher. Everything's going to
The whole world is operating on how much is the monthly payment. Who cares what it costs?
Exactly.
That changes when the monthly payment is not so cheap.
And right? I actually, even on a longer term basis, I just don't see them having the ability to hold interest rates artificially low for much longer.
I was just thinking that the move here to 152, a pullback to 144. And now if it doesn't take out 144, it may take a shot at 152, which would shock everybody, because 99% of the people talking heads think rates are going higher.
Right. Well, 152 though, but then it's
already that would be yields going lower.
Right. Oh, I agree with that. But as long as it doesn't break, well, let me see what that is. Where was that high 2 weeks ago?
About 148 and change.
150.
Right?
No, it actually was
152. Yeah.
So you're talking about that. So yes. If it went above there, I'll continue to trade. But I would be like you. I'd be like, whoa, what are you doing?
Yeah. And it looks like the positioning is clearly for higher rates. So, you know, the market sometimes moves in the direction to hurt the most people. You know?
Well, I like that, but yes, it's true.
All right. Both of you guys have got excellent things for people to look into as far as coming up with a trading plan and also having discipline and finding the trading plan that fits your personality and your circumstances. So I think that's excellent. Talking first to Simon, how can people get a hold of you and learn more about what you can bring to the table for them?
You can go to my website. It's tradesmart4x.com, the number 4. And then an x.com. So Tradesmart, TradeSmart, the number 4, x.com. And again, there's some free stuff there, free videos you can watch see if this is for you. I have a YouTube channel as well. You can get via my website. Go and watch some videos. I used to put a video out, which you may think is not relevant to now, but it's a video series I used to put every Sunday before the market opened of where the dollar is going next. I did that for over 2 years, and it was right, well over 90%. I think it was about 97% or 98% of the time completely accurate ahead of time of what the market, what the dollar is likely to do. So even just watching through those videos, even though they're old and not relevant to now, you'll learn how to approach analyzing the market so you can make high probability decisions, or so you can actually trade in the right way. Again, I want to leave you with this thought. You never know what the market is going to do. Yeah. The only thing that we can control is what we're going to do. So if you know the probabilities of what the market's going to do, you should have a plan. If the market does this, and I'm going to do this. If the market does something else, I'm going to do something else. So have an idea of what you're going to do if a market does something, and then just wait until the market does one of those things. And then you've got a plan for what you're doing. That's the better way of approaching trading rather than trying to guess what the market's going to do.
Right. Get your contingency and then enforce it.
Yeah. Yep.
All right. Very good, Simon. Michael, again, a little bit about how they can get a hold of you and what you can do for them.
Sure. First, I want to just, again, piggyback. Simon, that was brilliant. What you said was absolutely brilliant about that. What we can control is what we do, mm-hmm. and therefore have plan A and plan B. What if the market goes up? Here's what you got to look for. The market goes down. That's what you got to look for. That's what I teach. And again, right now, for those that might have an interest, that I am running some Black Friday specials, and they'll run through next Monday at midnight or Tuesday at midnight. I'm not sure which the date, but it's to join the Logical Signals Trade Room. And each day, what I am presenting via my YouTube videos, which are updates, is exactly what Simon said. I'm like, this is what we look for. If it's going to go up, this is what the market should do. And here are your levels. If the market should decline, this is the break point. That'll give you that clear signal that it is going to go lower. And here are your points of reference on the way down. So I try to do that each and every day for our trading days via my YouTube updates. And those channels are through Traders Helping Traders or on YouTube. Just go to Traders Helping Traders and then look for my name. There's somebody else who's hijacked our, and that is trademarked, but they hijacked it. And so you might get somebody different, but you always look for my name. And I have two channels. And on both of those, I give a daily update on the S&P 500 and also one on the NASDAQ 100. And thank you both for all the wonderful conversation. And thank you, David, for inviting me again today.
Thanks a lot, Michael. Always a pleasure to have you. For optionprofessor.com, we have a weekly market newsletter going over our opinions and our observations on all the different markets, which I think is bringing a lot to the table. So go to our website, optionprofessor.com, put your email in, and it's free of charge. It'll go right out to you every week. David, thanks a lot again. We will talk soon, and I'm going to send it over to you right now.
All right. Thanks, guys. Great show. Lots of good info today. So just a quick reminder for everyone listening, be sure to subscribe to Timing Research on YouTube or your favorite podcast app. And you can also just go to timingresearch.com to get access to any of the past shows and reports. Also, if you missed this last week, we did a huge four-day Friendsgiving event where I invited 36 different presenters to give presentations. The Option Professor, Michael and Simon all were part of that group. So if you just go to timingresearch.com and scroll down a little bit, you can see all the presentations from last week. I just invited some of our favorite presenters from over the years and asked them to give their best bit of trading advice or education, you know, for the audience. So a lot of good education there last week. Those are also available in podcast form if you look up the podcast. So if you don't have time to watch 36 hours of education, you can listen to the ones that you don't have time to watch. I just want to thank my guests again for today, Simon Klein of TradeSmartForex.com, Michael Filigera of LogicalSignals.com, and the Option Professor of OptionProfessor.com. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, David. Thanks, everyone.